for free. Now the powers that be, they like a bomb-proof Cadillac, conditional tapback, seat gun rack, platinum hubcaps. They pick horses for courses, they're the market forces. They like order, makeup, limelight power, game shows, rodeo, Star Wars TV. They're the powers that be. If you see them come,
back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. That, of course, was Roger Waters with The Powers That Be, and needless to say, The Powers That Be have been up to some pretty messed up stuff over the last little while. I mean, of course, like today, and this is largely by request, a regular listener of this show has requested that I give my opinion. Of course, I am Siegfried. That me, Siegfried, give my opinion on what has been going on in Greece. Now, I know I've kind of been dragging my feet. I mean, it's been in the press and the news. Greece has been all over the dial recently when it comes to the news cycle. It's one of the reasons why I kind of was a bit hesitant at approaching it, because the situation is very complicated. But now Greece has been on the front page for a while, largely because of the fears that if the debt-ridden Greek economy tanks and if the Greek government fails to pay off its loans to the EU and the IMF, they could default. And indeed, they have defaulted, at least on IMF loans, leave the Eurozone, and send the European and world economy into a tailspin. But needless to say, there's more to it than that. Greece is effectively being held for ransom right now. The IMF and European Union have been forcing crippling austerity policies. Crippling austerity policies on Greece for many years now, initiating a vicious cycle of Greek government slashing public spending, gutting public services, laying off huge numbers of workers, cutting salaries, and raising taxes on the majority of the population while cutting taxes on the wealthy. All to secure favorable bailout terms and money from international creditors. So in Greece right now, unemployment is skyrocketing. Youth are migrating, they're emigrating in search of jobs, you know, en masse. And old age pensions are drying up or disappearing. People who have jobs are working longer and harder for less and less. While everywhere you look, money is being siphoned upwards from the workers, from the working class, you know, to wealthy investors and bankers. What amounts to a massive upward redistribution of income. You know, this is what's going on in Greece right now and has been going on for the last, like, several years. Now, since the left-wing coalition known as Syriza came to power last year, you know, left-wing coalition government came to power in Greece last year, largely because of the Greek people's dissatisfaction and, you know, their growing anger at these austerity measures being enforced on them. They elected a government that was supposed to do something about it. Well, Greece has been, since that election of the left-wing coalition government, Greece has been attempting to negotiate for more favorable terms from its European creditors. And these negotiations have been dragging on, and deadlines have come and gone, and it's becoming more and more clear that the European banks, the governments of the main European powers, particularly Germany and France, and the IMF, have no intention of backing down on these debt negotiations. They want it all. They want complete repayment from Greece. They want Greece to do whatever it takes. You know, cut however many programs, however many salaries, however many benefits or pensions, what have you, in order to give them their money. They want Greece broken to their will. They don't want to accept any concessions on their part. They want Greece broken to their will. They want it to be basically a debt-ridden, poverty-stricken nation, open for untrammeled exploitation by global capitalism. But to this agenda, the Greek people say no. This past Sunday, July 5th, nearly two-thirds of Greeks voted in a referendum against caving to the demands of the European Union, against caving to the demands of European finance capital. They refused to sacrifice their country, their future, and their children's future to pay back a debt that, frankly, was never theirs to begin with. Greece, like so many of the countries on the periphery of the European Union, from Ireland to Portugal to Hungary to Latvia, Romania, etc., effectively has no self-determination. Its economy is dominated by the economic powers of Western Europe, Germany and France in particular, and it doesn't even control its own currency now that it has the euro. These countries have primarily become a source of cheap labor, cheap resources, in Greece's case, a tourism destination, and a market for Western European manufactured goods. And they're also like the source of the legions of migrant workers who, you know, have to leave their country, leave their countries of origin and go try to find jobs in Western Europe, particularly in Germany. You know, and have to work under, you know, substandard, terrible conditions for not a lot of money. You know, and get exploited virtually, you know, without rules. They're like a category of migrant workers, just like the migrant workers that we see working in the fields, in the agricultural sector and other sectors of the economy here in Canada. They're a super exploited class of workers. And, you know, and mostly they come from Eastern Europe and in places like Greece and, you know, Spain and Portugal and places like that. That's the main source of migrant labor in the countries of Europe right now. So essentially, Greece and these other countries are basically colonies. You know, they're colonies. And just as economic colonization has been enforced via crippling debt and structural adjustment programs worldwide, you know, directed by the IMF and enforced by the IMF and World Bank, You know, here we see it again. In Greece, we see it again. We see the same things happening. And it's important for us to realize that the capitalist class doesn't know the meaning of the word enough. It always wants more. It wants it all. You know, it wants more profit, more resources, more market share, more of everything. And it doesn't care if that means misery, poverty, and suffering for millions and millions of people. It simply doesn't care. There is no such thing as capitalism with a human face. You know, and basically, I'm going to express the opinion of many, including many people in Greece. Greece should stop trying to appease its creditors. It should stop trying to appease the IMF, the World Bank, the EU, Germany and France. And it should leave the EU. That goes without saying. But even that is not enough. The Greek people must take back their country. They have to take back their self-determination, their democracy. They must declare independence, not only from the EU, but from the global capitalist system itself. That's the only way they're ever going to achieve self-determination in Greece. Effectively, they have to become a socialist country. They have to take control of their economy, nationalize it, work it in the public interest, ensure that people have jobs, people have the support that they need. They have control over their own lives. This is the only way. It's very hard. It's always hard. Because there are immense reprisals, as we've seen throughout history, directed against states that go down the path of socialism. And often these countries like suffer terrible reprisals, like economic blockades or even invasions. You know, all kinds of of destruction, because of course they represent a threat of a good example. You know, and the imperialist powers of the world want to destroy that. You know, and this is why Cuba's been under a blockade for more than 50 years. And while the lifting of that blockade has been going on so slowly, you know, and it's and all these kind of things, because of course socialist states are looked upon, by definition, looked at as enemies by the capitalist class and the capitalist states of the world. And it's, you know, once again, this is because they want it all. They cannot accept making less profits, you know, having, you know, certain countries and peoples break away and determine their own destiny, you know, and not accept the control of the capitalist class. Because that, of course, means less money. That means less power, less profit for the capitalist class. You know, and they cannot accept that. They can never accept that. I mean, as Michael Parenti has said, the mantra for the capitalist class is, we have a lot, we can get more, we want it all. And this is why they cannot tolerate, you know, an assertive Greece, you know, a Greece asserting its independence. This is why they're imposing these kind of crippling austerity measures on Greece and on other countries. You know, because they want control. They want total control. And this is what we're up against in the world. This is what we have to oppose. This is the agenda we have to oppose. And of course, people have been opposing that in various ways. I mean, just recently we, of course, had a massive march in Toronto. You know, more than 10,000 people came out. You know, even if I disagree with some of the politics of the people who came out, even though I think some of them, the politics they express is somewhat naive. You know, they're certainly not, you know, Marxist-Leninist revolutionaries, most of them. You know, seeing 10,000 people in the streets of Toronto mobilized against austerity, you know, mobilized, you know, against these forces that, of course, are not only just, you know, ruining the lives of so many people around the world and exploiting so many people around the world, but also destroying the environment and effectively causing the climate crisis. You know, people are starting to see the connection here. People are starting to see why it is that things like this are happening. And people are getting angry. People are rising up. People are marching. And that is encouraging. And certainly I hope that the Greek people continue their fight and that they hold... I mean, this leftist coalition government that they have now has definitely, you know, made some serious mistakes. You know, they've gone back on a lot of their promises. They've caved to a lot of the European Union's demands. And it's only pressure from the people of Greece that's going to keep that government from totally caving in and giving the European Union what it wants. So it's all about the Greek people right now. They're the ones who have to take a stand. They're the ones who have to march, shout, be in the streets, you know, fight back against this agenda. And I have faith that they, you know, they've expressed their opinion very clearly in this referendum that was just held on the 5th on Sunday. And I believe that they will continue fighting. You know, they will not back down. You know, they're fighting for their self-determination, like so many people around the world. And we need to stand in solidarity with them. You know, this is very crucial to understand. Because once again, we are up against capitalism. You know, and capitalism is the enemy. You know, capitalism is what wants to control us and exploit us and break us to its will. And that's what we have to oppose. Please stay tuned to Back in the USSR. You're listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. That was Nine Inch Nails with Head Like a Hole. And I think that song, at least that song's always spoken to me, is pretty indicative of the mentality that the capitalist class displays. Once again, you know, they want it all. They understand that they have a lot, they can get more, they want it all. That's the mentality of capitalism. Capitalism always seeks to expand. It has to expand, it has to build, it has to compete, it has to grow, basically at any cost. You know, and it's willing to run roughshod over anything that stands in its way. And that's of course, is basically the entire theme of that particular song. That's why I decided to play it. Now, what I was talking about, you know, I was talking about Greece before. But the important thing that a lot of people don't realize is that Greece is definitely not alone in this concept of, you know, being in a debt crisis, being like trapped in debt, beholden to international creditors, and basically having all these austerity measures imposed on it by institutions like the IMF and the EU and all these different, you could say, organizations that represent global finance capital. This clip that I really want to play right now, it was done by the Real News Network in just this past week. And in this clip, it actually talks about the situation in Puerto Rico right now. And Puerto Rico is apparently in a very desperate situation economically because of these measures that have been imposed on it. Effectively, Puerto Rico is a colony of the United States. You know, its people have been exploited by the United States, and its economy has been distorted, you know, for more than a century now, ever since the United States took over that island from Spain in the Spanish-American War in 1898. You know, it's been basically been seen as a source of cheap labor, cheap resources, cash crops, you know, things like this. And now, of course, offshore trading, it's a tax haven. And given the kind of financial wheeling dealing and all the kind of, you know, nonsense that goes on with that in tax havens, it should not be surprised that the entire place is now on the verge of collapse, economically speaking. You know, this is what happens. You know, and certainly Puerto Rico does not have self-determination at all, economically, politically, or what have you. So, you know, this clip, I think, really describes the nature of what is going on in Puerto Rico, and also places it in context of how the Puerto Rican people have for a long time been fighting back and struggling for their own independence. You know, and they've been fighting for more than 100 years, like I said before, trying to secure their independence from the United States. And this is a struggle that does not get a lot of airtime. It does not get, like, anywhere near the kind of airtime that Greece is getting right now, but there's similar conditions in both places. You know, similar conditions of people basically fighting back against colonization. But in Puerto Rico's case, it is outright colonization. It's not just like economic colonization, economic domination. It is outright colonization. You know, the United States government controls that country. You know, politically, economically, militarily, everything. You know, there isn't even like a charade of an independent government or an independent state. You know, so I'm going to play this clip from the Real News Network that talks about the situation in Puerto Rico. So please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.
What's up, world, and welcome back to the Real News Network. I'm Jared Ball here in Baltimore. Summarizing the history of our subject this segment, columnist Dar Jamal wrote the following in May for truthout.org. In 1981, Oscar Lopez Rivera was convicted in the United States in truly Orwellian fashion of the thought crime of seditious conspiracy, despite never having been accused of causing harm to anyone, let alone taking a life. Having been deemed dangerous by the U.S. government, Lopez Rivera was imprisoned. His release date without a presidential pardon will be 2027 when he is 84 years old. To discuss this further is our guest, Vicente Panama Alba. Alba is a union organizer and was formerly a member of the Young Lords Party and was himself incarcerated as a political prisoner for his alleged involvement in the Puerto Rican National Independence Movement. What's up, my man, Panama? Welcome to the program, and thank you again for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I am actually in Puerto Rico.
Oh, I did not know that. Well, welcome, and thank you for joining us from Puerto Rico. Thank you. That's perfect. So if you would, I wanted to ask you to respond to that initial introduction and tell us a little bit about Oscar Lopez Rivera and the work that he was involved in, that you were also at time involved in, and what led to his incarceration and what people are trying to do to get him out now.
Well, you got to understand something. Puerto Rico was militarily invaded in 1898 after 400 years of colonialism under Spain. It came under U.S. imperialism's brand of colonialism. And that's what we have been living under since 1898 to the present. There has been numerous efforts on the part of the people to free Puerto Rico from colonial domination. In 1950, the Nationalist Party led an uprising, October 30th, 1950. Many people were killed, many went to prison, and that was one of the great examples that we have before us in terms of the struggle for national liberation. Oscar Lopez Rivera was part of the Puerto Rican community in the diaspora inside the United States. He was born in Puerto Rico, migrated to New York first in Chicago, where he established, his family established roots. A Vietnam veteran, decorated for bravery in Vietnam, who in that process begins to develop a consciousness about the nature of the United States government and the nature of racism in America and the United States, and the nature of the relationship of the oppressed and the oppressor. He returns to Chicago and begins actively organizing in the Puerto Rican community in Chicago. And in the process, makes a commitment to fight for the independence of Puerto Rico, for the liberation of Puerto Rico.
And if I could interrupt you just for a moment, you talked about the tradition that he was a part of, and I just wanted to call out some of the names for those who might not know, and please elaborate for me on any of these. But we're talking about also a legacy set down by people like Pedro Albizu Campos, and then later Lolita Lebron, and folks who, you know, those are some of the more popular names associated with this struggle. But that's sort of the tradition that he was coming out of, correct?
Absolutely. The father of the Puerto Rican nation, Ramon Emeterio Betances, who was involved in the liberation of the Caribbean, he organized an uprising against Spain in 1868, 30 years before the United States invasion. Subsequently, there were people, the legends, like Aguila Blanca, who resisted and the invasion in 1898, the reorganization of the Nationalist Party under Don Pedro Albizu Campos, and the uprising in 1950, and subsequent other heroes and heroines, such as the five nationalists that were free from U.S. prisons in 1978, Lolita Lebron, Rafael Cancel Miranda, Irving Flores, Andres Figueroa Cordero, and Oscar Collazo. In the 1970s.
And I'm sorry to interrupt you again, but that's such a great story. I mean, again, forgive the interruption, but those five you mentioned, I mean, they ran up in the House of Congress in Washington, D.C. with guns, demanding that there be freedom and liberation granted to their island. I mean, this was, I think, an extremely powerful and courageous act, something that seems to not get enough attention or respect.
Well, Well, two actions. One in 1950, on November 1st, 1950, Oscar Collazo, who was a nationalist, attempted to assassinate President Truman in what was then Blair House, which was the temporary residence of the President of the United States while the White House was undergoing renovations. He and Griselio Torresola attacked Blair House. Griselio Torresola was killed in that action, and Oscar Collazo was arrested, sentenced to death. The death sentence following a huge international campaign was commuted, and he was one of the five nationalists, along with Lolita Rafael Irving, that were released in 1978. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Fuerzas Armadas de Liberación Nacional began operations taking armed propaganda actions in various institutions of the United States government and its corporate masters in the United States. That began 75. Oscar López Rivera was arrested in 1981. Never was he linked to any of the military actions. He was never convicted, never linked or convicted to any deaths in the United States. But they assumed the position of prisoners of war, and him and the members of the FALN were convicted of seditious conspiracy. Very ironic, because you cannot be seditious against the United States when you're fighting for the liberation of your homeland. You can be seditious if you're a U.S. citizen that wants to overthrow the United States government in the United States. But you can't be seditious for wanting the United States to leave your country. That's a very different situation, and it's one, in fact, the United States, the nations, recognizes wars of liberation against colonialism. Colonialism is the enslavement of a nation, and that's what Puerto Rico is to the United States, is a slave nation.
Yeah, we saw here, Vicente, that Jan Susler, Rivera's attorney, said that his arrest in 1981 was overtly political, and that she says that it's important to see Oscar not as an isolated case, but as the latest example of a long trajectory of Puerto Rican resistance to U.S. colonialism and the extent to which the U.S. will go to try to maintain its colonial control over Puerto Rico.
Vicente, absolutely.
So, Vicente, unfortunately, we are out of time in this segment. I need to thank you very much for joining us. And please, if you would, give one final comment as to how people can follow up on this case and this history and perhaps get involved in helping free Oscar López Rivera.
The way there are two ways of freeing political prisoners: through breaking them out of jail, and that has been done with Guillermo Morales, broken out of Bellevue Hospital, another member of the FALN, or through political campaigns. It's a sad statement to say that we, the Puerto Rican people, have been the only ones that have freed political prisoners through political campaigns. We freed the nationalists in 1978. We freed another group of FALN prisoners in 1999. It's sad to say, because there are many political prisoners in the United States that must be freed.
That's right.
Okay. Now, Oscar López, we need to launch a campaign. And the window of opportunity is closing rapidly, because, as it turns out, Obama, Democratic president, has skirted around the issue. If the election comes to be the presidential election, you have one or two alternatives: a Democratic presidential candidate getting elected, or a Republican. If a Republican gets elected, you forget about Oscar Lopez being released. If a Democratic Party candidate gets elected, and it looks like Hillary Clinton will be that candidate, she has already stated her opposition to the release of the FALN prisoners. She did that when her husband released the prisoners in 1999.
So, Vicente, again, apologies for having to interrupt here again, but we do have to wrap up this segment. So what I'd like to do is conclude by encouraging people to ramp up the pressure on the current president, and encourage that he, in his last couple of years here in office, use his lame duck status to do something quite unlame by pardoning and releasing Oscar Rivera Lopez and all the other political prisoners. But Vicente Panama Alba, thank you very much for joining us here at the Real News Network. We greatly appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you for having us.
And thank you for watching.
Free Puerto Rico.
Yes, indeed. Free Puerto Rico. And thank you for watching here at the Real News Network. And for all involved, I'm Jared Ball. And as always, like Fred Hampton used to say, to you we say peace if you're willing to fight for it. So peace, everybody. Catch you in the whirlwind.
Y hasta tanto Puerto Rico no sea libre, soberano, independiente, si confiera autoridad a alguien, nadie tiene ninguna autoridad en Puerto Rico. Ni jueces, ni fiscales, ni policías, ni gobernadores, ni ningún charlatán en Puerto Rico.
¡Mama people!
To stop the occupation for the liberation of the entire population of the Puerto Rican nation. Gotta do it like the Haitian. Our destination is self-determination, cause freedom is the road seldom traveled by the masses. We too concerned with shaking asses. We never thought about taking classes. We getting more ignorant as time passes. The grass is greener on the other side, but on this side it's like a fucking genocide of our pride. We wave our flags and hide, cause we don't wanna deal with the real issue that's inside our community. That's why you wanna be a state. And how we gonna get our family off Section 8? That's the question. Wait, we gotta investigate, take immediate action, not hesitate. No,
we the new freedom warriors. Evidence on any beat, fighting up till we are as glorious. We the new freedom warriors. Yeah, you best believe that we're gonna be victorious. We the new freedom warriors. Evidence on any beat.
What you want in translation, que tú quieres, tú quieres que seguimos jugando este juego. Mejor te quemo con mi lírica de fuego. No soy ciego, yo veo lo que veo y lo veo, veo. Es un problema bien feo. Tiroteos en la calle, un grave detalle. Espero que mi pistola no me falle.
Put your flags up.
Viva Puerto Rico libre. El sonido hace que la bocina se libre. Como la voz del maestro Don Pedro. Sigue para adelante con la lucha machetero.
You're listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. That was Kike Cruz with Wake Up Boricua, which is actually a slogan from the Puerto Rican independence movement telling the Puerto Rican people to rise up against colonialism. And, you know, it's, if you compare Puerto Rico, you know, a colony of the United States, a colony of American imperialism, and you compare that island with Cuba, which is practically right next door to it, where, of course, the people do actually have, you know, even if they're under, like, crippling blockade and they haven't got a lot of natural resources and what have you, you know, they still have control over their economy. The people there actually have control, you know, over the Cuban economy. Like, they actually have self-determination over all aspects of society. And, you know, this is what they exercise. And they, like, have, you know, have an amazing program of free public health care, which, of course, they even export around the world, you know, and which has achieved, like, so many things recently. And, of course, recently they, you know, the Cuban medicine achieved an absolute milestone. It managed to stop transmission of HIV between mothers and babies. You know, that's a massive medical achievement for a country that has been pushed to the margins and, like, the United States has tried so hard to crush, you know, for more than 50 years. And yet it's managed to make achievements like that. That shows what poverty-stricken, colonized people can achieve when they gain independence, when they gain self-determination, when they get the opportunity to actually build their country on their own terms. You know, when they have the tools and the resources that they need, they can achieve incredible things. And just about every socialist country on the planet has proven that over the course of its history. You know, whether that's Cuba or China or the USSR or, you know, what have you. All these achievements have been possible because the economy was under public control. The people of those nations actually had self-determination and could govern their own affairs. They were not colonized. You know, they actually had real meaningful independence, and that real meaningful independence was made possible because of socialism. Now, once again, the working class, working people actually controlling their own affairs, economically, politically, socially, what have you, culturally. You know, that's the way that people gain independence in this world. That's the way to self-determination. And the only way to self-determination in a capitalist-dominated planet, I would say. And Greece is certainly finding that out now. Puerto Rico, of course, has known that for a very, very long time. You know, that frankly, the only way to self-determination is through socialism and anti-colonial resistance. You know. There is no self-determination within empire. There is no self-determination within the capitalist system. You know, you ultimately have to control your own affairs. And if you want to control your own affairs, socialism is the only way. You know, economically, politically, socially, culturally, you name it. You know, a country that where foreign corporations dominate, where free trade is the norm, when they can just come in and take whatever they want and there's nothing to stop them and the government is, like, basically in the hands of, you know, of investors, banks, creditors, you know, capitalists, interests. I mean, there is no independence there. There's no self-determination for the people. The people would be exploited to serve the aims of the capitalist class, to serve the needs of the capitalist class. You know, so in that sense, nations like Cuba that have achieved self-determination, they've achieved socialism, they are an example to us all. Now, I want to follow up on this by actually talking, by playing another clip from the Real News Network. This one actually deals with another issue, which of course is very important to me, something which I'm actually fighting for. I'm actually part of activist campaigns surrounding. And that, of course, is the issue of justice for migrant workers, who, of course, are coming into North America to find jobs, desperate people trying to find jobs because they cannot find work, they cannot find security, they cannot find, you know, any sort of prosperity for themselves and their families in their home countries. Because their home countries in Latin America, you know, in Mexico or, you know, El Salvador or Guatemala or what have you, have been devastated by the effects of colonialism, you know, by the global economy, which has just been raping these countries for their resources, for their wealth, you know, and treating their people like just a pool of cheap labor, you know. And so if they want to try to get away from that, they have to, like, take massive risks and try to get into North America, where they have to, like, face discrimination, persecution. You know, this clip talks about why there is such a flow of people northward from Latin America trying to get into, you know, the wealthy countries like Canada and the United States. You know, this really just lays it all out there. So please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.
Welcome to The Real News Network. I'm Anton Warnchuk in Baltimore. And here to give us a report on immigration policy at the U.S.-Mexico border is Jeff Foe. Jeff Foe is the founder and now distinguished fellow of the Economic Policy Institute in Washington, D.C. He's an activist, economist, and writer, and has written extensively on issues from globalization to neighborhood development. His latest book is The Servant Economy, Where America's Elite is Sending the Middle Class. Thanks for joining us, Jeff.
Thank you for asking.
So it's good to have you back on as a regular contributor. What do you have for us this week?
Well, you know, this week the media is absorbed with a foreign policy crisis in the Middle East. But there's a crisis occurring on our own border, in our own neighborhood, so to speak, that's probably more important to the average American than the question of whether militant Sunnis or corrupt Shiites run Iraq. For the last few months, last 6-8 months, thousands, tens of thousands of children have been pushing across the U.S. Border between Mexico and Texas in a desperate effort to flee poverty and violence and hopelessness in their countries. There are overwhelming facilities down there. The detention centers are overcrowded. The Immigration Service doesn't know what to do with these kids. Some of them get put on buses and they're to be sent to families someplace. It's a mess. And it's quickly deteriorated into politics, of course. The Republicans blame the president. The president says it's a humanitarian crisis and we have to act. And so we do. But lost in this debate is the question of U.S. responsibility for the basic causes of this tragic immigration to the United States. Immigration politics in the U.S. focuses on the U.S. But, you know, the question of what to do with people who are arriving here misses the point of how they arrived and why they arrived. People come from somewhere. And in this case, 95% of these children are coming from Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador. Now, this just happens to be three countries, along with much of the rest of Central America, that the U.S. has dominated and controlled for the last 100 years.
Well, exactly. What role has U.S. foreign policy in Latin America and Central America played in driving this this immigration?
Yeah, well, to answer that question, start with another question. If the United States is skilled in nation building, which it says it is, why are these economies such social and economic disasters? The answer is we have not run these economies for the people there. We have run them for U.S. investors who want cheap labor and their local oligarch cronies who provide the cheap labor. The enforcer of this system, and this is a system that goes back decades, the enforcer of this system is the U.S. military. Whenever people there have challenged the rule of these oligarchs and these repressive governments, the United States has run to the rescue of the oligarchs. In 1954, famously, Guatemala elected finally a left-leaning reformer. The first thing that happened was that the United States organized the Guatemalan military for a coup and an attack, and they drove the president out. It was followed by 30 years of savage repression. 150,000 people murdered in that little country over that period of time. Today, the same rich families and the same military control Guatemala. I was in Guatemala recently, and people told me they were afraid to take a bus because what happened is that every once in a while, thugs, armed thugs, would come aboard the bus, shoot the driver, and rob the passengers. A few days later, I was talking to a young man who said, no one can get a real job in this country unless they're connected to one of the five or six ruling families. So everyone wants to immigrate to the United States. But it costs $10,000 to hire a coyote to take him here. Where are you going to get the $10,000? They borrow it from the criminal gangs. Most of the time, people never make it. And they find themselves back in Guatemala owing $10,000 to some pretty bad people. And those criminals gangs say, give us the money, this is in his words, or we'll kill your mother. Or come work for us. And your first job is to put a mask on, take a gun, get aboard a bus, shoot the driver, and rob the passengers. Guatemala is a basket case under the regimes that we have supported. Same thing in Honduras. 1963, a reformer got elected. We supported a coup to get rid of him. 2009, another reformer gets elected. We support another coup. Now, 2009, the Obama administration publicly said, oh, that's terrible, and you know they denounced it. But privately, they paved the way for the military-run government to stay and the oligarchs once again triumph. In 2011, this is some of the latest budget numbers that we've been able to uncover. We exported $1.3 billion in military electronic equipment to Honduras. Now ask yourself, what is Honduras? Who is Honduras defending itself against? Who is invading Honduras? The answer, of course, is nobody. Now, the rationale is this great war on drugs. In the last 30, 40 years, billions of U.S. dollars have gone to the military in Central America ostensibly because of the war on drugs. Now, after 30 or 40 years, it's quite clear that the war on drugs is a failure. And the reason it's a failure is because the military that gets all this aid is knee-deep in narco trafficking. And what's happened now is the combination of drugs, weapons, and poverty is destroying these countries to the point where the children are fleeing. The war on drugs in Central America is a failure. But the war of the elite oligarchs on their own people has been a success. And the result are these poor children being driven across the border. Now, whatever comes of the immigration battle between the Democrats and Republicans, whatever happens to the president's bill, the waves of desperate immigrants from Central America, from other parts of the Caribbean, that we have essentially dominated over the last 100 years will not diminish. And it's never going to diminish unless the United States government, the United States people, face the reality that the basic cause of this immigration is rooted in the corrupt regimes that we have supported all these years.
Okay, Jeff, thank you very much for that report.
Well, thank you for having me here.
And thank you for joining us on the Real News Network.
Me dicen el desaparecido, cuando llega ya se ha ido. Volando vengo, volando voy, de prisa rumbo perdido. Cuando me buscan nunca estoy, cuando me encuentran yo no soy. El que está enfrente porque ya me fui corriendo más allá. Me dicen el desaparecido, fantasma que nunca está. Me dicen el desagradecido, rezando. Chida la guitarra, Moscú.